Benjamin can have love for the trucky. Beautiful minds, but we love getting ugly. Risk takers with a clover, man, we love getting lucky. You run, we chase fire, I love when it ducks me. Tones go off, house watch, read the address out. 1075, get up off the magic couch. 500 gallons prepared for the baddest drought. Who else you want on the way when disaster's out? Can't even get a little bit rattled when you enter with exit apparel. Mayday member down, they'll drag you. You won't get this from every Tom, Dick, and Harold. But here's a view from the top floor with Mickey Farrell.
Let's go. Let's
What's
go.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of A View from the Top Floor. So when we started this podcast, I talked about doing the floor above. I question Q&A segment of the show where we interact with our listeners and we talk tactics, we answer questions, and we kind of dive into the nitty-gritty, the dirty things that people have questions about and kind of fill in those gaps. I have neglected to really follow up with that. I did one episode, and it was really hard to talk to myself, answer a question into a camera. So after talking with my good friend Jeremy here, he's going to join me, and he's going to go over a couple of questions that I've been receiving over the past few months. And for those of you that did submit questions, I will get to them. I just didn't realize you were submitting them. So I appreciate the interaction with the floor above, and I think it's going to be a good segment moving forward, a part of the show where we can really get into it with some questions and really get to know some of the listeners. So Jeremy, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, man. I mean, listen, it's fun to have you on the platform. And, you know, what your podcast has been doing, the feedback has been excellent. I mean, you know, you have this unique perspective from where you come from, where you work, you know, your life before working there. So really well-rounded. And strategy and tactics matter. And we need to be focusing more on that. I find so often, and you and I talk about this, but so often we're focusing on culture and leadership, and we're not going after strategies and tactics. And we need to be talking tactics. Tactics should be 3-1 to the culture conversation, because ultimately the public doesn't care about our culture. They care about how we operate in a fire ground. So,
yeah, and that's just it. As far as the social media platform, for those of you that have been following me, most of my stuff is tactics, mm-hmm. and it fluctuates. I try to do a tactic, a culture.
Sure.
Push the buttons a little bit on the next one, then bring it back to tactics, do the quizzes here and there. So it's very interactive. But what I am putting out there as far as the social media follows a standard. And that standard is with firefighting IQ, with positioning. But it stands within my job, and I understand that, and I'm very strict with that. But that's why I like having you on to do this kind of thing. We can get both ideas. Like, you're from a volunteer department. You're doing how many runs there, roughly?
About 700, 700 a year.
You're going out the door, you're going to some fires, and you're doing tactics differently than what I am doing, but sure. We have to meet in the middle. We have to understand that the IQ of firefighting isn't necessarily always about volunteer or city-paid department or about staffing. It's about understanding where we fit in and talking about some of the, I would say, dangers within the tactics that we're doing when you are understaffed. So let's jump into it. What's the first question?
Yeah, so a whole list of questions here. Let's hop into this one. This is right in your wheelhouse. Should we be teaching guys to search above a fire without an engine company with a charge line below them just because training is more controlled in a metal or brick box? So I think the question really is, should we be above the fire without a charge hose line in place below us, taking care of business?
This is a great question, and this question really follows the parameters, I think, of building construction, the type of fires we are fighting. It's very different going the floor above a fire up the interior stairs of a private dwelling with an open interior stair. So think about most fires we're going to across this country. Capes, ranches, bi-levels, open interior stairs. So going to the floor above, making that move to the interior stairs, it's dicey. And I think that we should be making that move with a charged hose line in place and operating in a private dwelling. Again, that's timing, though. Everything comes down to timing. If you are going to make the move to go to the floor above with an open interior stairwell in a private dwelling, I think the move should be VES, right? Going in and isolating that area and searching the most occupied living areas, bedrooms, so forth and so on. Making that move through the window, isolating the conditions of the interior stairs of the flyer below. That's how we should be searching on the floor above when it comes to private dwellings. But then the next argument comes into, well, VES is dangerous, right? And we hear it across the country. Every academy's talking about it, you know, and that's just to say they talk about VES. They're not actually diving into the tactics of it and the safety of it, of how truly that is a safe form of searching. that gets disconnected. VES is a very, very safe form of searching the floor above the fire, where, yes, we're introducing a flow path condition, but we are now isolating that area to do our search, come back down the ladder, and then reposition that ladder to another room to continue our search. The basics of VE, quote-unquote, IS. Now, you've heard me talk about acronyms and the fact that VEIS is simply just the path in which we take to do a search. It's not a type of search. That's muddy, too. People talk about VEIS as a form of search. It's simply the path to gain position on the fire or to gain position on a victim. That's VEIS. So the answer to that question, as far as private dwellings, I think it's a really, really calculated risk. Taking those interior stairs without a charged hose line, I'm not sure I'd be so quick to do that. So we have to be very careful when we're going above. And if we are to make that move, do it from the outside in through a window. Now let's talk about multiple dwellings. This is more of, you have a whole floor separating you from the fire floor to the floor above. I do think when we get to that landing on the floor above, we have to find an area of refuge by forcing the off apartment, but also using the hydro ram or bunny tool to gain access quickly. Again, forcible entry, I'm all for using the irons, right? Traditional. That's how we force doors most times on the fire floor. The floor above, however, I'm not playing that game. We have to get into that floor above and close that door behind us as quickly as possible. We are on this line of fire. We are in the crosshairs of that fire if they lose the fire apartment. Very, very different. So we have that floor to fluctuate the protection, but we have to be able to get in quickly. We have to find an area of refuge. However, before we make that move to the floor above the fire, you have to make contact with that first due engine company, that first line going into the fire apartment. Eye to eye, physical touch, grab that brother, look him in the eye and say, brother, ladder one, we're going above. That way, that engine company knows the only place they're going to is to the burn center, knowing that ladder one's above. So the floor above, without that charged hose line in a multiple dwelling, I think we can make that move because there's better opportunity for isolation. Private dwelling, a little bit more dicey. Staffing dictates all this, but so does firefighter IQ and understanding ultimately where you fit in and where people are most likely trapped. So it's something to think about, something to talk about, and something to be aware of how dangerous truly the floor above can be. You know, we talk about it, we throw it around, we drill with it like in this question, but through our training, we can't introduce real-life fireground stress, as well as we can't introduce the speed versus velocity of real fire conditions. When you have a private dwelling, open interior stairs, those fire conditions, that tempo of the fire is very, very rapid. Zero time to make that move. And most times, think about the fires you go to, how quickly conditions change when it gets to that interior stairs and takes off. You don't want to be in that area. You don't want to be in the above and that open interior stairs moving to the floor above. So
you know what I love, Mick? I'm sorry. I just want to hop in. You know what I love about this conversation is that you bring up a very good point, and it's not often spoken about when we're talking about VES, VEIS, whatever you want to call it, right? Is the fact that the building dictates also. Like, we talk about it as a blanket statement. Do you VES? Do you VEIS, right? For the sake of it, I've always called it VES, but I'm going down that route, right? We isolate because that's just part of the job. I don't think we need to add it into the acronym, but I don't care. My point is this. Single family, private dwelling versus multiple family or apartments, right? There's a very big distinction in operations within those buildings. And so you make a very good point between the two, right? Where if it's small town USA, staffing's going to dictate whether you're going to VES or not, right? If that's even in your repertoire of tools to put out on the fire ground. And if it is, a private dwelling is going to be very different than a multiple dwelling. And you bring up a very good point. I don't think that's discussed enough when people talk about VES. They're not talking about the playing field that we're on.
Yeah. And as well as when you get there, it's all conditional. So if it's 3 a.m., in a bedroom community, and you pull up, and there's a woman screaming that her kids are upstairs, and we don't have that line in place. Well, that's a different story now. Again, conditional situation. I still think the best move in that situation, if we have a good fire on the first floor, to go through that window on the upper floor, but we got to make that move. We have to be ready to make that move. To pivot on the fire ground is important. And this, again, comes back to the IQ of firefighting, is understanding where we fit in, the X's and O's, offensive, defensive, moving the X's and O's into the gaps that need to be filled. That's what we have to talk about as well. So I think that it's one of those things where you have to be able to call an audible on the fly to get it done. But it comes down to understanding speed versus velocity and building construction. Now, I'm not talking about building construction in the sense of how buildings are built or how they collapse when they're burning. I'm talking about how quickly fire travels in certain kinds of buildings and how that flow state or that how that flow path can be altered for a tactical advantage, or it can be very detrimental if we're not understanding or situation to where we're doing in the moment. By taking a window in a certain part of the building, you could drastically change the tempo of that fire for the worst. So these are all things that, again, I think it comes into play with, are we going above without a charged hose line?
I want to tackle the second part of the conversation too, the second part of the question, right? And it says, because training is more controlled than a metal or brick building. It's a very good point as well, right? Where are we learning the skill set? It's typically in a controlled environment. And what you had just talked about with the multiple points that you've made, there's nothing controlled about it. We can try to control the environment by isolating the room that we're entering, right? Allowing that, you know, taking glass, making entry, letting that room breathe, go in, close the door. You can isolate. But even so, it's very different in a training situation or training environment than it is on the fire ground.
Yeah, and you know, the training environment is good for, I don't like the word reps. I really don't. But
I get it.
But that's exactly what it is. But sometimes those reps are setting you up for failure because of the building construction that we're training in. Thermal imaging cameras, that tick is a great example. All the training that's getting done most times is in a burn building. So after a long day of burning, you're not getting accurate understanding of how to use that camera. There's only a very, very few people in this country, I feel, that can truly teach that through experience of how to use it in fire situations in real buildings through cameras that were recording what was happening in the moment with real speed versus velocity in certain types of buildings, from class threes, wood frames, the project buildings, everything in between documented real life situations. That's where our training narrative in these types of buildings we're training in is setting us up for failure, as well as now going to the floor above in a concrete building, right? So we really can't get that fire flow from the first floor up the stairs and chasing you out the window. We can get it, but it's controlled. And when it's controlled, I'm not sure we can figure out or understand the tempo or how drastically things can change with real life scenario conditions. And that's where we're getting jammed up, is because we can't duplicate the stress, but we can't duplicate the speed of how these fires are burning.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good points for sure. Awesome. I think you tackled that pretty well, teaching the guys to search above without an engine company in place. I think you tackled that pretty well, Mickey. Thank you. Let's move on. We got a couple other questions here. Should we be concentrating so much on an engine company searching off their line instead of going as fast as possible to find the fire while monitoring conditions? Should we be searching off the line? Should that be a priority?
Yeah. So searching off the line, where I come from, that's not a thing. But I do understand staffing situations, and we can search off a line. Should we? Maybe. Situational. But I think the question here is going as fast as possible to the fire while monitoring conditions, right? That's a great point. I think getting water on the fire saves more lives than anything else. Quickly and efficiently, progressively moving forward, the engine company, the infantry, the fire service. Can we search off the line? I suppose, but getting water on the fire will save more lives in the end. That said, we can search off that line. I'm not saying we can't. Is it taught in the academies? I think so, but I think that as far as understanding the X's and O's, and I'll keep referring to this because it makes sense, being able to pivot in the moment to realize where you're fitting in getting water on the fire, I think, outweighs searching off the line. But, Jeremy, you're from a volunteer department where you're not operating so much as a truck company. You're doing dual tasks. How do you feel about that question?
Well, I think a couple things. One thing I want you to tackle, I'll go into my whole background. That's fine, how we do it, right? Because we have cross-trained companies. And so if we run a Quint and an engine, right, two different houses, they're arriving first, second due, right? So whoever takes that first due spot is going to be the engine company, and the second due company is going to take over typically the truck company role. So if the engine company arrives second due, the crew from the Quint's stretching, right? The priority, I know the priority is rescue, right? Life safety, obviously. But we got to get water on that fire. That line from the first due has to be stretched because I don't know if there's going to be an issue with the second due. We need to get, you know, hose on the ground, water on the fire. What I wanted to say was we're talking about surge, but a big part of what you talk about, and I've heard you talk about it at length, is we're searching for victims is one thing, searching for life. What about searching for fire? Like, the thing is this, right, is like, not every fire is showing itself. We love when fire is self-vented. We love fire out the windows because we know where we have to be and how to get there for the most part. But what if that fire is contained and the place is just wisping or puffing smoke and now we have to work through high heat and low visibility to find that fire? We're searching for that as well, and we can't lose track of that because not every fire is presenting itself to us on arrival.
No, that's exactly it. So searching on the fire floor, I didn't want to... I feel like I kind of beat this up a lot, and I talk about it quite a bit, but I think we're lost. I think we're lost in general because of our training. We're setting up for failure by not truly training to search for that seat of the fire, then directing the engine company into position, for the engine to learn patience, to wait, to find the seat of the fire. Like
but
I said,
that's in your world. Like, you have a truck company searching for that fire, but if you have an engine company that's arriving first due, and they're stretching that line, say, through the front door, and we don't know where the seat of that fire is, what's your game plan? Does that line hang out at the stairs until somebody locates it? Are we searching ahead or to the right or left of the line? Of course we are. We're not going to commit a line all the way to the rear of the house or the rear of a building if we're not sure that's where the fire is, because we're going to get in trouble, right? So now we are searching ahead of the line, or we are going to search off that line because we need to find where the fire is. Yeah, sure, our senses are up, our heightened senses. I'm feeling heat off my left side, but I don't know exactly where that is, you know? No.
Are you holding your line at the front door? And then
again, game plan decision, right? But I don't know where I would commit that line in my world, not knowing the staffing, right? If I say I have a 3-man or 4-man company on arrival and we're stretching an 1¾-inch line on a private dwelling fire, if I don't know where that fire is located, we got to get expeditious in our nature of searching that building, finding that fire. Where am I going to commit that line? I don't know. I might put it to the point of best access, which is typically in a common hall in a stairwell somewhere, right? Because I can either go up or I can go down. Typically, if it's a basement, it's below the stairs going to the second floor. So we might stage that line there until we can get some sense of where the seat of that fire or where that fire is located. It all depends on the job.
Yeah, I could see that. But I also see that by holding outside the building, now we can position that line somewhere else into the building at a different access point.
I have no problem with that either, of course.
No, it goes both ways. You know, I think it's dangerous to commit a hose line to a building if we don't know exactly where that fire is. Now, I know that comes down to timing, staffing, discipline, patience, all things that are very, very hard under stress on the fire ground. And it's very hard to master that when you're not going to fires every day.
In my world, in the private dwelling world, right, typically we're not dry stretching into a private dwelling. Typically, we're advancing a charge line into the building, right? So that way, right? So if we need to take a knee at the front porch or whatever it is, right? Whatever point of entry, right? That line's ready to go. If that line's 4 feet inside because I have a 3-man engine, one guy's driving, and now I got one guy and a line, we got to search with it. We got to go find that fire. I don't have a 5-man or 6-man company. So it varies greatly on the fire ground depending upon conditions and building.
So then this comes down to understanding your building construction, right?
Yeah.
So balloon frame is a great example where you could commit that line to the attic and then very quickly realize the fire's in the basement, you know, and then you're completely out of position. You're in a dangerous position at that point.
Yes.
And if that was to happen, that's okay. That happens. Mistakes happen on the fire ground. But instead of trying to bring a charged hose line from the attic all the way down to the basement or cellar, just stretch another line from the rig and put it into the basement or cellar. Don't try to reposition a charge hose line from the top down. It doesn't go very smooth. So that's something to think about. If you do make the mistake, own the mistake, hold your position, but get water on the fire very quickly from another line. Something to talk about, something to think about. Again, come down to staffing. So if you don't have that quote-unquote backup line or that third line coming off, we have to be patient to make sure we don't make that mistake. We can't get out of position with the line and realize the fire is somewhere else, because it's very hard to reposition a hose line charged in a small private dwelling. It's easy to go forward, but it's hard to go backwards with it. It's hard to reposition or recalculate or pivot that line in the building or in that home. Think about it. So going back to the initial question, do we search off the line? Do we search off the line for fire or for life, like you were saying, right? Two different things what we're searching for. I think you can do either, but we should probably have both of those dialed in before that line commits. We're locating the fire, bringing the engine into position, and then searching for life. Now, you don't do that, you don't have the staffing, you don't have the culture of that type of firefighting from where you're from, that's okay. You can do that off the line. Just be very, very careful not to overcommit that line and not to lose sight that water, in the end, will save more lives than any search off a line.
Agreed. I agree. And I think what's fun about this conversation is just the vast differences that exist in the fire service, you know? And, you know, I'm thinking, you know, you're dealing with a lot of ordinary, which is dimensional lumber. The big thing for us, you mentioned balloon frame. We don't have many balloon frames left. We have engineered lumber all over the place now. We're seeing rapid fire growth in early deterioration of buildings. And so expeditious nature of getting that line in place and getting water on the fire is more imperative than it's ever been, because we're watching massive structural failures under large fire load, whereas years ago we didn't have that. So a lot of things at play here. I truly love the conversation, because there's so many different variables in firefighting, and that's what makes it so much fun to talk about.
And that's it. Just to build off, you know, something you like to say is the broad stroke. The fire service is not broad stroke, and so many industries, the fire industry wants to broad stroke this entire job.
100%.
But there's so many subcultures of society within the fire service that you have to dial into what works for you. You can pick and choose from each section of each subculture and adapt it to how you operate and how your town or city operates. But you have to understand, it's not a broad stroke. As much as the fire industry pushes broad stroke, that's dangerous. You have to just pick and choose, take little details from different parts, different people, and then paint your own picture.
I do love the conversation that firefighting's local. I mean, I think we need to be, you know, super dialed in on that and say that's okay. You know, listening to your podcast like I do and getting to know you, you know what you know, because that's your game. That's your gig every single day in and day out, right? It's going to vary a little bit from where we are, but we can all learn from each other, and some strategy and tactics that you take from the pavement can certainly translate over to what we're doing here and vice versa. So I love it.
You know, that's another argument or another discussion is data, right? We're so caught up in this data, and that's like the 50-yard line between service and industry is data.
Mm.
But we're not talking about data is regional. Very regional. We have to be careful with data. There's a lot of great data out there, but let's not focus our tactics on data, because data is not a broad stroke information source. It's very, very regional. It's localized. Something to think about when we're talking about or reading or trying to put together a policy or a guideline through data. Does it work for you? Does it work for your town, your city, your department? That's what you really have to discuss. So you can take data from all over the country, but understand that it's regionalized.
I love it.
Yeah.
And so let me ask you this as we wind down the process of Top Floor Tactics and the podcast. Enjoying it. No? Yes?
Double-edged sword. It's getting easier.
Well, listen, you know what I love? I love the fact that you said, hey, I got some questions and I don't want to do these by myself. So I was like, yeah, man, I'd love to jump in. I love what you're doing, and I know it's been a frustrating process for you, but I think finding your way, this is, you know, it wasn't built overnight. So Hang in there, man. This is good though. You got a lot of knowledge to share. You come from a background. You grew up in a volunteer firehouse, and now you've been a career fireman for a very long time. So you bring a lot to the table, and through your social media page, Top Floor Tactics. I mean, you certainly have shared a lot of insight and brought a lot of excitement to the job on social media that is being done the right way. And so I think that your voice matters. So keep up the good work, man. I think it's great.
That means a lot, Jeremy. Thank you. And as you know, and my friends that do know, how's the podcast going? I'm like, it sucks. I hate it. But I don't necessarily hate
it.
Yeah,
I know.
I'm warming up to it. But, you know, it's hard. It's really hard to sit down and just talk to a camera. Very easy to talk to you or talk to any guest for that matter.
Sure.
I like the short episodes. I like to keep it around 20 minutes. I haven't quite gotten there. They're only like 7 to 10, but...
It's all right. It's quick building. Listens.
Yeah, it's building. But I appreciate the opportunity to be able to do this with you. That's for sure.
It's been fun, man. I mean, outside of all of this, I mean, I could talk shop with you for hours and hours, and we do it a lot. You know, we talk a lot because we have such a similar background in our upbringing and between our families and the volunteer fire service, all that stuff. But, you know, I love every part of that. But we've created a good friendship along the way, too, that I value. So, to be able to take a half hour today and just chat with you, man. I don't care if it's reading questions or just catching up. It's always fun. So,
yeah.
Anyway, with that, sign off. It's your show, not mine.
All right, guys. So, thanks again for tuning in. This is The Floor Above the Fire, a question-answer segment of the show where you can submit your questions, and I'll do my best to get you an answer if I don't have it for you. You can submit that at thefloorabovethefire@gmail.com. It's just a temporary email until we get up and running with the more, I guess you say, professional email rather than Gmail, but we'll get there, you know, baby steps. A week from today, both of us will be at FDIC. So if you see us, come up and say hello. I'm speaking Wednesday at 1:30, and you're there for the duration, so.
Yeah, we'll be there all week. We have our booth. We're out in Firefighters Row with a lot of the firefighter-owned businesses, as well as working with a couple different dealers and manufacturers while we're there. So it's going to be a great week. So if you're in Indy, come say hello. Love to see you. And the one thing, Mick, about this segment of your show, be specific. If you have a question, more specific, the better. This broad stroke generalization conversation doesn't bring any doesn't bring a lot of value, right? So be specific and ask, you know, poignant, specific questions that's on your mind.
Yeah, that's it.
Love it.
All right, Jeremy, thank you.
Thank you, brother. Right, guys, it's always good seeing you.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody.
All right.